Thank you, Roy. I didn't know he was talking about me for a minute there. That's quite an introduction. I appreciate that. I am glad to be here. I'm glad to be out of that dang-gum plane, that's for sure. My morning started pretty early in Albany, New York, and actually in Cooperstown, where the Hall of Fame was, and I didn't get to see because I was on a tight schedule, but I am glad to be here. And I hope what I share with you, the lateness of the hour, will be of benefit to you as we make some comparisons between using an old-time available estrogen, which is called estradiol cypionate, and the more traditional GnRH programs that are available. Why? Let's ask the question, first of all, why might we want to substitute estrogen for GnRH? Well, there's a number of reasons. First of all, we've known for many, many years that estrogen will induce sexual behavior or estrus. It is very instrumental in increasing uterine tone. It's associated with normal sexual behavior and estrus in cattle. Estrogen is responsible for the secretion of mucus that lubricates the tract for natural mating, as well as for artificial insemination. And we know that cows may be somewhat easier to inseminate, particularly when we use timed inseminations when estrogen is used, based on work that's been done with dairy cattle. When technicians feel the cows, they feel like they're in heat. When giving timed inseminations, it has an effect on their psychological psyche, if you will, in terms of breeding cows at timed AI. Estrogen will increase estrus activity. It has very positive effects on people, and probably on the cow as well. And probably another driver for this is that estrogen is significantly less costly than GnRH. So let's look at some of the reasons why we may want to do this. But first, just the basic physiology if we compare these two different hormones. Most of you are familiar with the fact that gonadotropin-releasing hormone is secreted by the hypothalamus, which is a portion of the brain, and it is secreted down through a portal system, and it causes the release of LH and FSH, the two gonadotropins, from the anterior pituitary. FSH is responsible for initiating follicle growth in the ovaries, and LH causes those follicles to mature and eventually will cause ovulation of a preovulatory follicle. LH and FSH are also responsible for steroid secretion by that follicle, and LH is primarily responsible for the secretion of estrogen. So if we give GnRH, it will induce a surge of LH, which eventually causes ovulation. And in a normal situation, estrogen, which comes from this follicle, is the trigger for GnRH to be released from the hypothalamus, which then causes LH release, which triggers ovulation. So if we look at this little cartoon here, we see an increase in the blood titers of estrogen that normally occur around the time of estrus. They usually peak in the bloodstream near the onset of estrus, and that is the trigger then for this large increase in LH that occurs that initiates ovulation. And generally, in a normal situation, from the timing of the onset of estrus, which coincides with the peak in estrogen in the bloodstream of the cow and the peak in LH, ovulation occurs about 27 hours later. Now, estrogen will induce this LH surge, but it does so through the secretion of GnRH. And so if we use estrogen, we're basically backing up one step in the hormonal cascade to cause that follicle to ovulate. So estrogen is causing GnRH release, and that's causing the LH surge and to bring about ovulation. Now, we have just a couple of notes about the various different types of estrogens. Estradiol 17 beta is the principal estrogen that's secreted by the cow's follicle. It's the estrogen that causes mucus secretion, it causes estrous behavior, triggers GnRH secretion, which causes the LH surge, which brings about ovulation. Estradiol benzoate is very similar in structure, as you can see, the only difference being that there is a benzene ring or a benzoate structure that's associated with this oxygen group here. And it mimics very closely estradiol 17 beta, and it has a very similar half-life to estradiol 17 beta. Now, this product is not available in the United States as a product. What we have available on the market is estradiol cypionate, which has been around for about 50 years. It started out being an Upjohn product, and now with the purchase of Pharmacia, it now is a Pfizer product. And it has a longer half-life than benzoate or estradiol 17 beta because of this substitution, a larger substitution of the cypionate here off this oxygen. There's also another estrogen that some of you may be familiar with, and that's estradiol valerate. And this is the longest acting estrogen that's been available at one time or another. It was the estrogen that was associated with the Synchromate B system that is no longer available on the market. Now, the differences between these estrogens in terms of what they do when administered exogenously or by injection is the effects that they have on estrus, the timing of the effects they have on inducing estrus and inducing the release of LH that causes ovulation. As you go this direction to the longer acting, longer half-life estrogens, when you inject that estrogen, the peak is lower, but it hangs around for many, many hours to even days. So in terms of these two estrogens, the injection bolus will maintain longer profiles of estrogen in the bloodstream of the animal. Benzoate mimics more closely the natural estrogen. Now, I want to talk for a few minutes about extra label uses. And I hope when I get done with that, you'll understand why I'm doing so. Extra label means that a drug is being used for a purpose that's not listed as one of the indications on the bottle label or the bottle insert. In other words, it's being used for a purpose that was not cleared for by the Center for Veterinary Medicine through the Food and Drug Administration. For example, the label for a Gene RH product indicates that its approved use is for the treatment of ovarian follicular cysts. And we have four different Gene RH products that are on the market. Their only label clearance is to treat follicular cysts. Use of Gene RH in any estrosynchronization or ovulation control program is considered to be extra label use. Now, we know that Gene RH products have therapeutic approvals for use in cattle, and that approval is for resolving follicular cysts, which is a very minor use of Gene RH in the market today. If you strictly interpret AMDUCA, which is the Animal Medicinal Drug Use Clarification Act, the strict interpretation is that Gene RH products cannot be used for production purposes in cattle. If you use this very strict interpretation. However, these Gene RH products are being used extensively for estrosynchronization programs by veterinarians, by academic research people such as myself. They've published the results in scientific journals and in the popular press. Gene RH is a very small protein. It's actually a peptide. It's made up of 10 amino acids. And it has a very, very short blood half-life. And it has no known health concerns. And so the FDA must have minimal concerns regarding its use in estrosynchronization programs because we're unaware of any known prosecutions that have been initiated by Food and Drug. So these products, which are really labeled only for resolving follicular cysts, are used extensively for other extra label uses. Now, let's talk about the estrogens for a minute. Estradiol benzoate has no human or animal approval in the United States. The only reason estradiol benzoate got into the United States is because when the cedar was brought in under an emergency order for mostly ET use in the last several years before the cedar insert became available on the market, some of those cedar inserts came in with a product called cedarol, which is estradiol benzoate. If you strictly interpret AMDUCA, estradiol benzoate cannot be used for production purposes. Furthermore, it's not available. You cannot buy it. The use of estradiol benzoate in estrosynchronization programs is illegal. Now, some of you probably know of people that have used the Cedarol product. May I encourage you to not use a product like that that's not legally approved in the market. Why? We don't need any type of problems in the marketplace with our consumers in terms of using products that are not legally manufactured and sold in the marketplace. The public's perception of the use of estrogen, for example, going back years ago when DES was used as a means of preventing abortion in mothers in the 50s, is not something we want the public to get a hold of. And certainly not a product that's not legally available. There are some veterinary supply houses that are selling estradiol benzoate that's being illegally manufactured someplace or imported from Mexico or Canada. Let's not be a party to that, because that will backfire, I believe, if we're not careful. We don't want the public to make assumptions about things, primarily because they do not operate on anything but emotion when it comes to something that's as issue in their food supply. So, the use of estradiol benzoate is illegal when compounded with other approved products. There are veterinary supply houses in the United States that are selling the cedar with this Cedarol or estradiol benzoate. That is illegal. They're going to get caught, and you don't want to be a party to that. In contrast, estradiol cypionate has a therapeutic label for the use in cattle in the United States. It's been around for a long time. It's the only estrogen that's approved in cattle, and now it's a Pfizer product. This is what it looks like. And one of its label indications says you can use ECP to correct anestrus, the absence of a heat period, and in the absence of follicular cysts at 3 to 5 milligram doses, which is a whopping big dose. So it has on its label that you can use this to correct anestrus in the absence of a follicular cyst. Now, if you strictly interpret AMDUCA, it says that ECP cannot be used for production purposes in cattle. Just like Gene or H, it shouldn't be used if you have a strict interpretation of the law. Because ECP is an estrogen, it is of concern to the Food and Drug Administration relative to health and safety, for obvious reasons. ECP is being used extensively in estrosynchronization programs by veterinarians, by animal scientists, and they've published the results in scientific journals, and it's been published in the popular press. FDA has not initiated prosecutions of either researchers or veterinarians using ECP in cattle estrosynchronization programs to date. So apparently they have not chosen to do anything about the use of ECP, probably because of two things. One, the dosage that's being used is usually a half or 1 milligram, which is significantly less than what's on the label, and the uses of ECP are very close to one of the label indications. All right. Now, let's get into some of the physiology of how ECP may compare to Gene or H and what we need to do to get cows pregnant. I'm showing you here a system that most of you are probably familiar with, which would include an upfront Gene or H injection, what I'll call upfront, given 7 days before a prostaglandin product. And then whether or not an estrogen injection here can mimic Gene or H and what it will do to the cow, or an estrogen injection over here that may be given after we induce corpus luteum regression and the cow comes into heat. Okay? So what does the upfront Gene or H injection do? Any cow that has a follicle here, we can generally induce that follicle to ovulate. If that follicle is somewhere around 10 or 11 millimeters, Gene or H will induce that follicle to ovulate. Well, so we have two different types of cows that we're concerned about when we start the breeding season. We've got cows that are anestrous, that have not yet ovulated, but may have a follicle that we can induce to ovulate with GnRH, which is very effective and has been demonstrated many times over that that will work. Or we have a cycling cow that has a corpus luteum at this time, and if she does have a follicle that's sufficiently large to respond to that injection, we can induce then a second ovulation, so the cow would have two corpulutea in response to that injection. Most of the work done in dairy cattle suggests that if cycling cows at random stages of the estrous cycle are given GnRH, about 64% of them will ovulate a follicle, even though they have a corpus luteum in place. So this dosage we're using is what we'd call pharmacological. It's sufficiently large that in the face of high progesterone, when the corpus luteum is functioning, we can still induce an ovulation. Now, normally what happens after we induce ovulation with GnRH, about a day or a day and a half later, a new group of follicles begin to grow, and that follicle that emerges from this group of growing follicles is a follicle that will eventually ovulate in this type of synchronization program. Now, what does estrogen do? If there's a follicle there, can estrogen mimic what GnRH does? If there's a corpus luteum there, it will likely not cause an ovulation. But what happens with that dose of estrogen that's given is sufficiently potent that it will block LH secretion, and because LH secretion is necessary for these follicles to continue to grow, as we see here, they will not grow. That follicle will turn over and a new group of follicles will begin to develop. But notice the difference in terms of the timing relative to the two injections. Whereas this is about a day and a half till we see a new follicle wave begin, when we give estrogen, depending upon the type of estrogen that's given, this is delayed up to 3 to 5 days, depending upon the estrogen that's given. So if we're going to supplement, if we're going to replace GnRH with estrogen, we have to have the ability, it must mimic what GnRH does there for us. And usually in the anestrous cow, it gets a follicle to ovulate to get that cow cycling. Furthermore, it must, if we're going to use it on this end, after luteolysis, it also must induce estrus and ovulation and give us high ovulation incidences compared to what GnRH can do. Now the problem is here, if we use the systems that we've described, because this follicle doesn't emerge until 3 to 5 days after this injection of estrogen, the follicle that we attempt to ovulate after luteolysis is going to be a significantly smaller follicle than in this program where we use GnRH. And so the timing or the time period between these injections will have to be increased to make it work. And I'll give you some examples. So if we're going to replace GnRH with estrogen, estrogen must be able to induce follicular turnover in a synchronization program in cycling cows. I'm talking about the upfront effects. It'll turn a follicle over like GnRH does in a cycling cow. It must be able to induce ovulation in anestrous cows, as does GnRH, or it's not going to be as effective in jump-starting, so to speak, some of those cows that are not cycling. And it must be able to induce ovulation after we regress the corpus luteum with luteolyse or one of the prostaglandin products. It must not produce hyperestrous activity. If it does, then we're going to have injury problems by cows that are excessively riding and mounting and cause feet and leg problems, particularly if they're on hard surfaces, including concrete. And it must be easy to administer. So these are the things that it must do if we're going to replace GnRH. Now, let's look at the upfront follicular control based on what's in the literature. And the only thing we really find in the literature is using the estradiol benzoate product, which is not available in the United States. But it does give us some idea of whether or not we can use estrogen prior to a cedar-based system. So in this study, they put a cedar in. They gave either 1 or 2 milligrams of estradiol benzoate. And these were lactating cycling cows from down under. And you can see here, there's the conception rates of these cows after they were detected in estrus and inseminated. For control cows, cows given 1 or 2 milligrams of benzoate and in anestrus cows. And they were anywhere between 40 and 60%. Up front, and here's a comparison where they used estradiol benzoate versus GnRH in a system where they used the PRID. If you remember, the PRID years ago is a progesterone-releasing intervaginal device. It was a coil. It never did come to the market. And in this study, what they did is they gave estradiol benzoate or GnRH, put this progesterone-releasing device in the vagina for 8 days, and to see if it was effective in replacement heifers. We're looking here at the percent in estrus. If you look at the estradiol benzoate and the GnRH system, they're fairly comparable. But all these heifers came into heat. Nearly all of the GnRH heifers came into heat. Percent in heat by 72 hours. So the estrogen, in this case, was very effective in heifers. Now, what about anestrus cows, which may be anywhere from 25 to 50% of the cows that start the breeding season? Using estradiol benzoate, which is, again, the estrogen we don't have available here, at these doses, at the time of the cedar insertion, did not induce ovulation effectively in seasonal anestrus dairy cattle. We don't know what it will do in beef cattle. But in seasonal anestrus dairy cattle from New Zealand or Australia, it was not very effective. If they used estradiol benzoate in a cedar-based system, it did reduce the formation of persistent follicles in these anestrus dairy cows, which are really quite similar physiologically to our anestrus beef cow, but they delayed follicular development in some of these anestrus cows. We don't know what it'll do in beef cattle, really. Immature follicles, small follicles that normally we can't induce to ovulate in anestrus suckled cows, were less likely to ovulate after estradiol benzoate. So in the anestrus cow, it does not appear that the estrogen is going to be quite as effective as GnRH. Now, can estrogen induce ovulation after we have caused the corpus luteum to regress or die? And the answer to that is yes. Using ECP and studies that we've conducted in Kansas and studies that were conducted in Florida by Bill Thatcher, these are in dairy cattle now or in replacement dairy heifers, we can in fact use ECP to do this. We give ECP, the surge of LH occurs in 19 hours. Estrus occurs at about 27 to 29 hours after we give the estrogen. The duration of estrus is normal, somewhere between 7 to 12 hours on average. These are the number of times these cows stood, the total standing time based on the heat watch system. So those are normal. They're not hyperphysiological. Ovulation after the onset of estrus was about 29 hours. And if we look at the time from ECP to when ovulation occurs, it was somewhere around 55 to 60 hours. So after the corpus luteum has regressed, if we give estrogen, we can induce the surge, we can induce estrus behavior, we can induce normal ovulation in dairy cattle and replacement dairy heifers. So apparently it is effective there in studies where these types of traits have been examined. Now, is it easily administered? ECP was dosed at 2 milligrams per mil. It used to be, I have a bottle that was manufactured in about 1983, it used to be 1 milligram per mil. But now it's 2 milligrams per mil. Which means if you're going to give a milligram dose, which is the dose that we're using now, That means you have to only administer a half of a cc or a half a milliliter. That means you've got to use a very small syringe or some type of repeating syringe that's available at a cost where you can deliver small doses easily. It's not the easiest thing to administer, but people have used it, find it after they've done it, after they've used it, they find that it work, that it's really quite easy to administer. And of course, when we inject cows, we want to follow BQA guidelines to reduce carcass bruising, and we should try to do those, make neck injections, which you can do using various different types of syringes to deliver those small doses. Now let's talk about how we can use aspergine in a cedar-based system, because most of the data that we have where we get the most consistent results in beef cattle involves using the cedar in conjunction with GnRH. And so let's look at what happens when we use estrogen in those types of systems. And I'm going to skip two slides here, and I'm going to show you what data there is. There's not a lot of data available, but what there is available is quite promising. These are data that are courtesy of select sires that Roy Wallace and Mill Desjarnette have gathered in their select sire system. And they made some comparisons here to see whether or not they could use, whether they could use estrogen up front, 1 milligram of ECP, which is the estrogen that's available in the marketplace, compared to using GnRH in a cedar-based system. Now you'll notice in this treatment they use GnRH, put in the cedar for 7 days, and then use prostaglandin. And they timed and inseminated those cows 52 to 60 hours after prostaglandin and cedar insert removal, and gave those cows a second GnRH injection to induce ovulation. The next treatment, they simply substituted ECP at a half a milligram dose and timed inseminated. You can see the difference from 24, it'd be about 48 hours later. This system, they use the cedar. But what's important here is they use the cedar for 9 days instead of 7. Now, why did they do that? Remember what happens when we use estrogen in terms of follicle control. When we give estrogen here, it's going to take 3-5 days before we get a new follicle that starts to develop here. And so to get a follicle to the appropriate size, comparable to a GnRH-based system, we need to have an extra 2 days of that cedar insertion period. And so in these two comparisons, they use estrogen up front and estrogen to induce estrus. Okay, so the data, we're going to compare the effectiveness of using GnRH up front compared to estrogen, or using GnRH after luteolysis compared to using estrogen. And they have data from cows and heifers. These are suckled Angus cows. Here's the first treatment where they use GnRH up front. You can see here an estrogen after luteolysis. Although the numbers are limited, it would suggest that ECP can substitute after luteolysis or after prostaglandin, after cedar insert removal, because the pregnancy rates are numerically greater. Certainly was not hurting the results, not dampering the results. When they used estrogen in both places, the results were a little bit less in parity 1 cows and older cows. So this system where you use GnRH up front in cows with a 7-day cedar using ECP after you induce luteolysis gave some pretty good results. Now these are timed inseminations 52 to 60 hours after luteolysis and cedar removal. Timed inseminations. In replacement heifers, there really wasn't too much difference in the two herds. There were differences between the way those herds responded. Still, they're only getting about 34 to 39% pregnancy rates to a timed insemination, which are really, you can beat that with a lot of other systems. But what it does illustrate is that using estrogen can be substituted, at least on this side of the treatment, after luteolysis, up front. There's just not enough data to make any conclusions at this point in heifers. But it certainly is somewhat comparable in comparing GnRH and estrogen, ECP. These are some data that we collected that we've also doing another 300 or 400 cows this spring. And what we're simply doing in this study is compare again using GnRH after we induce luteolysis compared to using estrogen. Plus we have calf removal. So we actually had four treatments. All these cows were fed MGA for 14 days. 12 days later, they got GnRH, then they got luteolysis, and these two groups got estrogen. This group had their calves removed for that 48-hour period. This group had their calves removed for 48 hours, but they had GnRH. So the GnRH was given at the time of insemination, which is at 72 hours after luteolysis, and in these groups, they were bred at 72 hours after prostaglandin or 48 hours after estrogen. The results were as follows. If you compare the effects of using estrogen to GnRH, the ECP gave us a little better results to timed insemination. The data that we have collected thus far, we pregnancy diagnosed 153 cows on Monday, and the data comes out almost identical to what we're seeing here. So the estrogen can be used to substitute for GnRH. The calf removal effect over here, you do see an effect of calf removal, but what's really interesting in these data is that there's an interaction here with calf removal. You look at, if we had no calf removal really had no effect when we gave the estrogen. It had a big effect when we used the GnRH-based system. When we add the data in from this spring, and then we're going to add in another 210 cows here in just another month, what we're seeing is the two best systems here is GnRH with calf removal, which is extra work, or using ECP with no calf removal. There's not much of an effect of calf removal when we use estrogen, which is quite interesting. And it's consistent in the data we've got so far. So what we can conclude from this is you can use estrogen in the place of GnRH after inducing luteolysis. So, ECP is an alternative to GnRH for upfront follicle control, but may not be as effective as GnRH in our anestrous cows. I don't think we have enough information yet to address whether or not ECP will work as well upfront. The data set from Select Sire suggests that, yes, it probably can be used, but we don't have enough data, I think, to be sure of that. ECP, if it is used up front at cedar insertion, the cedar must be in place for 9 days rather than 7 days. And that's because of the fact that the follicles that develop subsequent to giving ECP, that there's going to be a delay in that emergence of follicle control or follicle growth. After cedar removal, after luteolysis and cedar removal, ECP is an alternative to GnRH in timed AI systems. We're convinced of that. We've seen enough data now that it is something that we can use. Pregnancy rates of timed AI tended to be greater in these beef cows when they were treated after prostaglandin with estrogen than GnRH. And I think we'll probably see that will probably hold true in data that comes subsequent to the large study that we have underway. Now, the last 5 or 6 slides, I'm going to talk a little bit about how we might use the cedar insert in terms of a resynchronization effort to inseminate at the first eligible estrus after the first insemination for cows that we've synchronized. In other words, can we increase the number of cows resubmitted for a second insemination if we choose to use a second insemination rather than turning cleanup bowls? And so here is the reason or the objectives that we might consider for resynchronization. Increases the opportunity to use to get more AI sired calves because we can resynchronize the estrus. We can take full advantage of a previous synchrony with little additional cost, and we can facilitate heat detection at that first eligible heat after AI. In other words, what we're going to do is we're going to attempt to resynchronize estrus in cows that have been inseminated. Cows that may be pregnant or not pregnant. That's what we're attempting to do here. So we can get as many of them re-inseminated 20 days after that first service as possible. So I'll just show you a couple different ways that this has been done. In the literature, you'll find that people have used previously used progestin-releasing inserts or implants that have been reinserted for a period of time to allow resynchrony to occur. They fed MGA, an oral active compound that you're all aware of. Or they've combined progestins with estrogen injections to resynchronize estrus. Or they've used off-sync and heat-sync in much of the dairy work that goes on. I'll show you just results from two studies. In this study, we used dairy heifers and beef heifers that were previously inseminated back here 13 days after that first insemination, which was their first insemination of the breeding season for beef heifers, or the first insemination in these dairy heifers. We had a control group of heifers in which we did nothing, a group in which we inserted a seeder for 7 days, between days 13 and 20. So we anticipate that if the heifer did not conceive to the insemination that was made back here, that she's going to come to estrus about 20 days after that insemination. What we're doing in this treatment is basically preventing any early estrus, so that when the seeder comes out, they express estrus in a very tight 1 to 2 day period. In this treatment, what we're doing with a half a milligram of ECP is we're turning over the major dominant follicle at this point, so that we've synchronized a new follicle to develop during this period of time in the cow that's not pregnant. And then we're going to remove the seeder, allow them to come to estrus, but we're also going to induce estrus with a second half milligram injection of ECP. So this is the distribution of estrus in those females that were not pregnant. So we resynchronized estrus in the non-pregnant animals, and this is what we find in the controls. You can see that some of the controls came into estrus prior to the removal of the seeder, because there was no seeder in those animals, so we had some heifers coming in at 17, 18, 19 days after they were inseminated. Where we put the seeder in place, we had no early estrus, and most of the heifers showed estrus on the first or second day after the seeder was removed. This would correspond to 21 and 22 days after they were inseminated. If we put the ECP injections with it, you can see that we basically just redistributed the estrus activity, so we got lots of estrogen activity on the first day after seeder removal, or day 21 after insemination, and a little bit less the next day. Now, let's look at what happened to the fertility of these animals. We had a limited number of heifers, 44, 42, and 44, that were assigned to these three treatments, the control, the seeder, or the seeder plus estrogen injections. This is the pregnancy rate to the first insemination. It ranged from 47 to 60%. There's no differences there because we have limited numbers of observations. We don't anticipate that these treatments will harm pregnancy. Here is the return rate of the heifers that were not pregnant to that first insemination. 73% in the control, 84% and 90%. So we're getting a very high percentage, but it is not significantly different than the control. Here's the kicker. The conception rate of those heifers that came back to estrus in that period of time after their first insemination, it was apparently reduced. And so it was harmful to that repeat insemination. The 26-day pregnancy rate, which would include the number of pregnancies that resulted from the first and second insemination, varied from 60% to 73%. So in heifers, it did not provide us any advantage in terms of using a resynchrony. One study in beef cattle. These were 588 beef cows that were inseminated by time back here. We used similar treatments. We had a control. We had a group of cows that were given a seeder. And we used estradiol benzoate here, estradiol cypionate here, at the onset of the seeder insertion. And when it came out, we gave again estrogen to induce estrus. in the non-pregnant cows. Here's the distribution of estrus from part of those cows from the Kansas trials. The control cows, we had cows that came back to heat early. But those that had cedars, none of them came back into heat until after the cedar was removed. And this would be the 20th day after timed insemination, at the same time we gave either one of the two estrogen products. You can see that the distribution of estrus, when we used benzoate, which is a shorter-acting estrogen, put most of the heats on the first and second day. When we used ECP, which is a longer-acting estrogen, most of the heats were on the second day, or 48 hours after the cedar came out and after we gave estrogen. So we had about 70, almost 75% of the heats on that one day. Now let's look at what happened to fertility. Here's the number of cows that were treated in the control, the two cedar-based systems with the benzoate or cypionate estrogen injections. Here's the pregnancy rate from the timed AI. It varied from 44 to 52%. It was not significantly different, although it looks like the benzoate may have had a slightly negative effect. Here's the percent of cows that came back into heat 20 to 23 days after the timed insemination. Only 29% of the controls, and all these cows were handled the same way in the same pasture. We got 65 to 84% of the returns in that period when we used the treatment here. The conception rates of that returned estrus was normal. It may have been slightly reduced in the benzoate, but it certainly was normal when we used the cypionate, which is the product that's available, and the control. So in this case, it was not harmful in terms of using resynchrony. And in fact, if you, which I'm not showing you in this slide, if you looked at the 26-day pregnancy rate, this treatment here actually increased the number of pregnancies we had after two inseminations compared to the control. So to summarize what we've done with resynchronization of repeat estrus, we've observed no negative effect on established pregnancies. So we're trying to establish resynchronization in cows of unknown pregnancy status. We did not harm the pregnancy if it was already underway. And that's important, or it would be fruitless to use that type of treatment. We did increase the synchrony of the repeat estrus. It bunches them up closer together. It tended to reduce resynchronization conception rates in the heifers. We did see that in heifers. But we did see normal conception rates at the resynchronized estrus in beef cattle when we used the ECP cedar combination. And I'd be ungrateful not to recognize some people that have been very supportive of our research, including Select Sires for both financial support and supporting a lot of things or efforts are going on in the beef cattle area. Pharmacia, Fort Dodge, Intervet, and Mariel for providing products. We couldn't do this kind of research. Thank you very much for your attention. That's a really good question, Tom. And if you didn't hear in the back, is why do we see a reduction in fertility at resynchronization in heifers that we don't see in cows? And I think it's primarily because we are not doing a very good job with the estrogen injection in controlling follicle growth in those heifers like we do in cows. But that's simply a speculation on my part because we have no data to back it up.